Welcome to Sipping Success, the ultimate podcast for all things beverage and alcohol. We're here to quench your thirst for insights, analysis, and a splash of entertainment. Get ready to dive into the world of beverages with us. From the latest trends to in-depth discussions with industry leaders, we've got it all covered. Whether you're a connoisseur or a curious sipper, Sipping Success is your go-to guide. Join us as we uncork knowledge, raise a glass to innovation, and help you elevate your brand to new heights. So grab your favorite drink, sit back, and let's sip success together. Tune in to Sipping Success and drink in the wisdom. Cheers.
And hello, everybody, to another episode of the Sipping Success podcast. I'm your host, Casey Hawkinson. And this week, we have a very special episode and a wonderful story to embark upon. We're joined by the co-founders of the Rising Wines Collective, Corey Amundson and Sandra Everingham. Corey is the CEO, and Sandra is the head of wine relations and inventory management at Rising Wines Collective. And the collective was founded on the idea that people who love wine also love community. Rising Wines Collective connects you with some of the best small production wines from Washington, California, and Oregon. So I want to thank you both for joining us here on this episode. Love having you here.
Thank you. We're excited to be here.
All right. Yes. Well, great. Well, thanks, Corey and Sandra. And again, in our kind of time together, putting this together, I was enthralled by the story of how you put your business, how you started your business. So we won't waste any time. So can you tell us about your background and what led you to get into wine?
Yes. You know, for both of us, it was a progression of learning about wine in our younger years and falling in love with it more and more. After 25 years of tech marketing, I became overwhelmed with the feeling of wanting to become a winemaker. I was so passionate about the stories behind these winemakers, the craft behind the wine and the decisions that they were making, and even the science and chemistry behind it. And so in my late 40s, I enrolled into a wine program and got my degree in winemaking and enology. And at that time, I thought, okay, it's time to launch a winery. And as I was about to pull the trigger and buy some barrels and buy some grapes and really dig in, the pandemic was about to hit and things were about to shut down, and something didn't sit with me just right. And so that's when I reached out to Sandra. And Sandra has, amongst many things, has a background in coaching, business coaching. And I had said to her, you know, I've got this idea percolating and I want to tell you, I want to talk through it. And so she had said, come to my backyard. Let's open a bottle of Chardonnay and let's talk. Mm. And then as we were digging into this and doing our research, she quickly said, I want to be a part of this. And Sandra, I'll let you talk a little bit about your background and how your strengths contribute to what we're building and what we're doing.
Yes. Well, my background is quite different. It's in the game industry. And one of the fun facts about me is that I was one of the first a handful of employees at Wizards of the Coast that helped get the first trading card game to market, Magic the Gathering.
Oh, wow.
And I had always loved wine. And about 6 years ago, my husband and I earned our WSET 2 certifications. And we also developed a wine podcast called Decanted. Mm-hmm. So when Corey is sitting in my backyard, I was already dreaming of wine. I was already dreaming of what could I do in the wine industry and change my career. And so when I said, you know, I want to do this too, it just felt like just a natural progression of what I wanted to do. And so I entered Sonoma State's wine business program and focused on the business side of the wine, while Corey was focusing on learning the production side.
Very interesting. And a lot of people that I meet somehow always kind of use the word hobbyist or whatnot in their journey towards, you know, starting their business or their career in this industry. I'm not hearing that at all. It sounds like there was real, from both of you, like real intention to kind of go that route of like, no, we're going to make a real business out of this. This won't be a hobby.
Right. I feel really fortunate that we found a way to build the next phase of our careers, our next chapter, around our passion for something. You know, it's not often that people do find that in their careers, and we're having a lot of fun with it. And I really hope, as we tell our story and as we go through this interview, that people will see that and feel that, and encourage other people to find their passions.
Yeah.
And what also inspires me too is that we started on this path going into our 50th year of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a second career.
Yeah.
And when I hear about it, it's like, oh wow, look what we did. We know where we had established careers, mm-hmm. and we wanted to change our careers, and we were doing it together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. So, and that's not easy. I mean, that's taking on risk and trying something brand new. So let's go back, I guess, within those 50 years. So I know the story really generally starts in 1975. So can you take us back to that moment?
Yeah. So Corey and I met. Oh, Corey, did you want to start?
Go ahead.
Start this.
Yes.
All right. I've told this story so many times, and we never get tired of telling it. So Corey and I met on the first day of kindergarten in Great Falls, Montana. Mm-hmm. And amazingly, that moment was captured by the local newspaper, us standing at the bus stops.
Mm.
And we became fast friends. We were inseparable, and we were your typical Gen X BFFs and there were so many neighborhood shenanigans. I'm like, there's just many stories of us being kids. Mm-hmm. That's entertaining enough. But my family, after 5 years in fifth grade, decided that we needed to move to Oregon. So my family left. Yeah, Corey was devastated. I was devastated. And we lost track of each other.
Mm.
And
I always
when the
thought,
internet.
Oh, sorry. I always thought that Oprah, you know, back in the day when Oprah used to do the reunite the friends on her TV show.
Yeah.
I always thought that Oprah would someday reunite us. But at that age, I didn't realize we had to reach out to Oprah. Tell our story.
Yeah.
But I always had this fantasy and this dream that we would be reunited.
And I would search for her online when the internet came out, where they had the
pay
$14.99 friend finder and find that long lost friend. But I never actually paid the $14.99 to go through that process. But Corey would appear in dreams that I would have. And one really profound dream was we were giants standing in this valley, looking at each other. And the message in the dream was, you are in the same valley. And I had no idea what that meant. And she would appear in other dreams. And then 2008, Facebook came around and gave me some hope.
Yeah.
So hers was the first name that I typed into the search. And there she was. I could not believe it because I thought maybe her last name would be different. So I messaged her right away. And I said, this is Sandy. Do you remember me? And within 5 minutes, she messaged back, oh my gosh, I have been looking for you for years, and 30 years had gone by. So we were just thrilled to have found each other. But this is where the weirdness comes in.
Okay.
So during our discovery of our reunion, we both discovered that we had attended art school in Seattle. So mm-hmm. we both found our way to that city. We followed some similar career paths, but we're just in different industries. We had a creative direction, art direction career.
Mm-hmm.
And so one day we decided to meet up for lunch. And Corey said that she was now working at an agency downtown Seattle. Mm. And I asked her, well, I'm also working for an agency downtown. Mm-hmm. Where are you? She said, I'm at Wonderman. And I said, well, I'm at Wonderman.
Mm.
And I was, well, what floor are you on? And she said, I'm on the fifth floor. I'm on the fifth floor. And I'm like, where is your desk? And she was texting me from the other side of the elevators.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I always joke around, Sandy's not a coffee drinker. So I always joke around, we never ran into each other at the kitchen because I'm always in there getting coffee and she's not.
So how big was the agency? Just out of curiosity, well, a lot of employees, is pretty big agency.
Yes, I would think maybe a couple hundred.
Okay. Yeah. So I can see, yeah, you're not going to know everybody with a company that big.
Yeah, and I was there
on
for a time. So I hadn't been there for years like Sandy. Uh-huh. I was with the company.
But talk about a cosmic sister bond. Wow. I really believe that destiny had been conspiring to keep us together.
Yeah, and then when like about a year later, we took a trip to Walla Walla, Washington to go wine tasting with our spouses. And our last stop, as at the end of the weekend, I was just overwhelmed with this feeling, like I mentioned, to want to become a winemaker. And I was like, I have to do this. And at this time, Sandra and her husband, Dave, were conceptualizing the idea of their podcast. And okay. Little do we know that magic moment sitting at this winery in this beautiful landscape outside, that would change the trajectory of our careers moving forward.
Wow. Yeah. Fascinating. So you made the decision to get into wine, and it was on that trip. And so, and I know, Corey, you said you went back and got some formal education around wine. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us the moment, I guess, when was really the moment when you and Sandra kind of looked at each other and said, let's start this collective? Can you maybe expand on that?
That leads back to, I'm going to take us back to sitting on the patio, back patio of her house after multiple meetings. And what had happened in that, as I was doing my research to previously, as I was doing my research to work on, as I was writing my business plan for the winery, I had come across a statistic that says small producers and small wineries only reach 1% of their potential drinking audience from the tasting room. And to me, that statistic was astonishing. That means that there's an entire audience out there that doesn't have time to visit these wineries or discover these wineries. And even the two of us in the industry, of course, Sandy especially is out there meeting new winemakers and, you know, we're visiting these wineries, but we don't even have time to go out and enjoy ourselves and go on these tastings because life is really, really busy. And for these producers with their main focus on the tasting room, they also have challenges of competing for retail space. You know, the retail space is primarily focused on mass distribution. And as much as distributors and small winemakers work together, it's really hard for distribution models for these distributors to really give the focus to small producers that they need to be able to sell beyond the tasting room.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, so you noticed that, the both of you noticed that problem, I guess, of them being able to distribute or sell beyond the tasting room.
Yeah. And the consumer, touching on the fact that we all want to go to, there's so many of us that have a desire to go to wine country to discover new wines and experience, you know, the romantic experience of a tasting room. We just don't have the time to get there. Life is busy. And, you know, with our jobs, our careers, kids, families, there's so much going on in today's society that we don't get to do a lot of the fun things, or those get put on hold. So they are asking for easier access to these wines. You know, they want the ability to easily find these wines online and shop these wines on their own timeline. And the consumer is also asking for more experiences from home, because with the focus of tasting room sales and wine club signups, the events happen in the tasting rooms, right? The release parties happen at the winery. Everything is focused around the experience of the location. And people who can't get there as much as they want to, they also want these experiences from home. And so when looking at with that, that's what Rising Wines Collective wanted to solve, is provide a new sales channel for small production winemakers, and then also make it easier and provide an inspiring place for these wine lovers to discover these amazing wines that we all care about.
Okay, great. And so can you all walk us through, I guess I kind of want to understand it on an individual winemaker basis. So say I'm a winemaker, how do I join your collective? What's that process like?
Well, if you're a winemaker, we both offer direct sales for opportunities for the winemakers and also club opportunities. So there are a couple pathways. Okay. And so, yeah, so what is really important to us is, you know, to develop a really strong partnership with winemakers and getting to know their small businesses, because they are small businesses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, living in Washington State, I've gotten to know them pretty well. Like with our Sonoma wines, I selected who I wanted to work with kind of based on their stories, their winemaking practices, and then traveled there and hand selected the wines, gotten to know the winemakers. Mm-hmm. And what I really love about our process is it doesn't stop there. You know, we put every potential wine through a really thoughtful tasting process with a changing group of individuals. So we want to know how sommeliers and wine educators experience these wines and what different people in their wine journey think of them, from the wine enthusiast to the casual drinker. Mm-hmm. And what comes out of those tasting groups and those discussions are a clear choice to really fantastic wines, and also how we write our product descriptions. And it's really validating when we hear from our customers how close our tasting notes are to what they experience.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So as you know, that, you know, a lot of times winemakers will write the tasting notes when the wine is first produced, but, you know, mm-hmm. these bottles can evolve, they can change. And so we want to make sure that we can provide, you know, an accurate, the best tasting notes that we can, that is, you know, close to what consumer will experience. So help them best choose the wine too. Like if you're pairing with food, or you just want something that more is in line with what you like.
Mm-hmm. And in the, you know, in the tasting room, when these customers are there tasting the wines, they have the opportunity to talk with the winemakers and the professionals in the tasting room, and they can tell that story of the evolution of the wine and the flavor profiles they're currently tasting within those wines. And we want to our mission is to bring that into the environment where people are shopping that online. And that's the part, that's where we're closing that gap between being in the, we're not trying to replace a tasting room, of course. No, we still want our customers to go visit these winemakers and to go experience the tasting rooms and the romantic experience of going on a long wine tasting adventure over a weekend. But it's about, how do we create that connection and build that environment and feed into that passion that people feel about those wines within their homes? How do we create these experiences for them and help them tell the stories or be proud of these purchases when they're sharing these wines with other people?
And one way we've done that is every winemaker has their own profile page.
Okay.
So people can learn about them, research them, and also shop from that page, their wines, and learn about their story. And it's something that when I talk to winemakers, they're so excited to hear about. They feel like they have a real partner because we truly care about them as people and think they have amazing wines and we want to help support them. Another thing that I just love what we're doing, trying to take that 3D experience of being at a tasting room into the home, is through our wine club. And I guess I would like to say maybe this might be the first customer portal that is an experience. We call it our club lounge. And so a club member who can log in, they can read about their wines. They can watch on-demand tasting videos of me and our wine club manager talking about the wines, breaking them down, telling about the story of the winemaker, and you know, moving forward in the future, we'd love to bring in the winemakers and have interviews, and we have music playlists that are themed with that allocation.
And recipes.
Food and wine pairings. Wow. Food and wine pairings, especially for that wine. And exclusive offers and podcasts and articles. And so we want to create an experience that people can go to. And it's beyond just getting that shipment where it ends from opening the box.
And so we have it right. So a person could join the club on your website and get that experience that you just described. And I'm seeing also, like, perhaps even on the website, you could go directly to see your winemaker list of, and you have them categorized by different regions, different types of ownerships, etc. And you can, from there, you can also zero in on maybe a wine that you wanted to purchase as well. So, if I want to make sure we have that right, so people can kind of picture that. So those are the couple different ways to be able to use your collective to educate yourself and be able to purchase these wines. Is that correct?
Yes. And one thing that's when looking at, so as part of my previous career, user experience and defining features for portals and e-commerce platforms is a big part of my background. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. One of the things that we looked at when we were building our site was what are people interested in? You know, are they interested in biodynamic, organic, sustainable wines? Are they interested in looking by region? Do some people care more about the winemaker and the stories behind that? Or do people simply want to find the perfect wine to match with the dinner that they're hosting over the weekend? So we've created different areas and avenues within the site where people can enter and shop by what they care about most and their desires. Because there's no, when you look at the wine industry and who the wine consumer is, there's five generations of legal drinking age. And there are seven or eight stages of your wine journey from beginning to very advanced. And I don't think it's possible for one business to nail down everybody's interests in one location. And, you know, what's important to us is that we are providing wines that people are passionate about. Our audience loves to discover new wines, and they care about the experiences that they're going to have with that wines. I believe everybody goes to, when they buy wine, they have something, it's an experienced product, and they have something in mind that they want that to drink, that open that bottle for. And so we took that user customer first approach in how we do everything. It's from experience of, like Sandra said, the wine clubs, the shopping experience of buying wines on the site, and how they want to enjoy them.
And that's what we really care about is how are people enjoying the wine? So we're wine lovers. We are some of our best experiences are not when we bought the wine.
Mm-hmm.
It's after we opened it and the experience that we have with it. So we want to help enhance that experience.
Mm-hmm. Where are our customers? We really feel like we built this for ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I will say for those of you out there, and I'll mention again toward the end, risingwinescollective.com. Go ahead and check the site out. It's really, to both of your points, very interesting site in terms of checking out the club. And then, you know, if you want to go in and check out the winemakers, you can see it organized by region, by practice, by community, different types of ownerships, whether you want to buy a woman-owned, want to buy from a woman-owned winemaker or family-owned, minority-owned. So, you know, all these different categories and things to check out. So I did want to highlight that. So that, you know, just wonderful way of how everything is organized.
This podcast is brought to you by Mushroom Media, the go-to digital media agency for all things marketing. From crafting captivating campaigns to decoding social media sorcery, Mushroom Media is here to empower your brand and help you scale. So whether you're brewing, distilling, or concocting the next big thing, Mushroom Media has a solution for you.
Okay, so the next kind of question I have then along those lines are, you've built this marketplace essentially and different ways to experience it. Kind of broad question, but where do you see it evolve to? Where do you see the future? What do you see like the next five or 10 years?
This is one of my favorite questions. So
okay.
What do mattresses and wine have in common? So they are both products that traditionally have required the consumer to go to their space, their small business or their store to test out a product. Traditionally you go into a mattress shop, you lie in the beds and you test out which ones you like. Traditionally with small producers, you go to the tasting room, you taste through wines and you decide which ones you like and you want to buy. Over time, within the last, 10 years or so, consumers have built trust in buying products online. And now today, over 70% of mattresses are sold online without going to try mm-hmm. these mattresses. What is happening in the industry is a online disruption of, and the pandemic kind of really catapulted this. You know, the pandemic, what it did was prove that consumers had positive experiences of buying wine online. And they, in surveys, say that they'll continue to buy wine online. So it kind of forced a faster pace into consumers building their confidence of buying these wines that they're learning about without having to taste the product first. And when we look at the revenue from online sales in 2019, online revenue was right around $600 million in the United States. It grew to $4.6 billion in 2023, and it's anticipated to hit $15.5 billion by 2030. That's a huge disruption in a sector of the wine space that you can tell that there's room for that sector. There's room for that space. It's considered one of the fastest growing areas within the wine industry. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as we love, you know, going to small wine shops and, you know, people buy wines on grocery shelves for convenience, there's limited space. Those spaces aren't going to grow much bigger. And so this has opened up the virtual space, the online space. There's unlimited space as long as there's consumer demand to meet it.
Mm-hmm.
And data is also showing that consumers are buying wine online that is over $15 a bottle. Mm-hmm. It's your $30, $40 price points. They're wanting higher quality wines. Yes.
And is that all across the country? Is that a general statistic that you're saying there, Sandra?
That's my understanding, is that is a general way the data is when showing that it is, yes.
Yeah, and the Silicon Valley Bank wine report and ship compliant wine report, they provide a lot of amazing information. And, you know, they talk about a lot about the consumer trends and average price point and where wines are being bought. And, you know, they are really the best in the industry that to provide and help people understand consumer behavior.
And so along those lines, it's really a question for the both of you. So, because you know, a lot of what you do in your marketplace, you do a really fine job of telling somebody's story, somebody's narrative, and then also allowing the consumer to really kind of make the decision and almost experience it the way they want, or at least start in a position of where they want to start. So would you say, is it really like when talking to a winemaker, is it really just crafting that narrative? Is that going to help usher along that, you know, higher price point buyer? So it's at $30 now average. Is focusing on the narrative for a winemaker, is that really where it's at as far as continuing to drive like a higher average price point?
Well, the consumer is, it's a collection of reasons where the price point, the average price point per bottle from wineries. And right now it's the average price point per bottle has gone up and it's right around $43, just over $43. I don't remember the exact change on that, but the consumer is driving that. And, you know, small production, the customer anticipates the price points are higher for craft small production wines. And the higher price point bottles, they're seeing increase in sales in that across the industry from consumers. And so we don't need to establish price point. Our goal was to be within that price point of what the customer expects. You know, when they look at is, you know, they want to know that they're getting the value from a luxury product of the money they put into it. And that's really what it comes down to. And when we work with our wineries, that's the first question we ask, you know, is this, when we're interviewing a new winemaker and building a relationship with them, is this, does this wine the quality or better than the price point at hand and the retail price point? And if it is, and it meets that, then that's where we bring those wines in and we go through the tasting process and with our tasting groups and really break down those wines. And we also spent some time with winemakers as we started this whole process and interviewed them. What makes a good partner? You know, what is it that we can build this ongoing relationship and because we really want to like each other. We really want to feel a team. We are one when it comes to this. We're in this together. And so we buy our wines direct from the we buy directly from these winemakers. We haven't gone through distributors in doing so. Not because we're against it. It's just that we have the flexibility to be able to work with them directly.
And so, and I know you, Corey, you just touched on it, and Sandra, you touched on it a little bit earlier, you know, building that relationship with a winemaker, and you shed some light on that. So you vet the winemaker in your process, and then so you also taste and break down the wine. So I want to make sure that, you know, everybody out there is kind of understands your process. I think we've touched on it in a couple different areas, but can one of you really just kind of spend a minute or so just walking us through that whole entire process of bringing on a winemaker?
Well, the process is, you know, over the years, I've gotten to know a lot of winemakers. And so bring in who I feel that would be a great partner, who we'd love to work with. I initially go through their portfolio and select the wines that I think they're going to be work really well on the site, that people are going to love. And then we bring those wines into our group. You know, we're discussing them. Does this, we talked about price point, but does this meet or exceed, let's say, a $40? Is the, are you getting more bang for your buck? And that's just super exciting when we hear from customers that say, man, this blew me away. I cannot believe it is only $40. You know, this is just tasting way above its weight class. And that's just really exciting to hear. But we're analyzing the wines. We're looking for balance. We're any wine enthusiast would want is a perfectly balanced wine between the tannins and the acid and sugar. And do you enjoy it? Like, is this something that you could see pairing with food? How would you experience this wine? Oh, this wine, I just want to sit on a couch and just savor every moment. Or this wine is going to be so good with my burgers, my pizza. We want to kind of break it down also, not just does the wine good, but how could we experience this wine? Mm-hmm. And then we choose the wine, we do the tasting notes. You know, I go back to the winemaker and we're like, okay, let's get your profile built. Let's get some assets. Let's write your story. Let's get your story on there. We choose the wines. And so this first round, we selected between one and three wines per winemaker. Mm-hmm. And we started off with close to about 60 SKUs. And then we're going to grow from there.
Wonderful.
And another thing that we include in the product descriptions is it's really bite-size information. So it's a quick read. So, you know, Sandra talked about the acid, the balance, the tannins, you know, is this a bold wine, lighter wine, you know, the alcohol level, you know, that's the tasting, the aromas. But we also pair a recipe with each of the wines. We have a section called the wine community where we have articles, wine education, and recipes, and we pair the wines with a recipe, a suggested recipe. And then we also, Sandra does a really good job of interviewing the winemakers. And so we have notes in there, production notes, like how is this wine aged? Is it steel tank, new oak, neutral oak? You know, we put details like that in there. And we even dig down into the vineyards and the soil types and the elevation of the vineyards where a lot of these grapes come from, which I think is really exciting because down the West Coast from Washington, Oregon, California, there's so much diversity and there's so much amazing wine coming that is being made in the United States that we're excited to highlight and really bring exposure to that to the rest of the country that doesn't live close to this like we do. We're fortunate because all three of us live close to wine country, so we've had a lot more experience, but we want people outside of that to learn and discover this as well.
Well, wonderful. Another great benefit of joining your club. So again, risingwinescollective.com, if you're curious, for those of you out there. So thanks for walking back through and having and giving us that understanding, that vetting process, and then really how it plays out on your website and within your club. You've been listening to the Sipping Success podcast. Our guests are co-founders of Rising Wines Collective, Corey Amundson and Sandra Evingham. And it's been wonderful having you on hearing your story and all the details of the business. Could actually see a second episode coming up to cover it all. But sadly, we're down to really our last few minutes here. So I did have just a couple questions I wanted to ask as we close out. You know, what advice would you give somebody looking to enter, particularly the wine industry?
It's time to think out of the box. You know, we love the traditions of the industry, but as I mentioned earlier, wine has been sold the same way for 40 years. So what is it that we can do and for people coming in the industry can do to really meet the customer where they are, listen to what they're asking for, and find ways to delight them.
How can you bring in more digital strategies into your business and understand that that is a very important part of a business that can catapult you even farther than you ever thought?
And how can marketing consultants and agencies make this more affordable for small producers so they have the opportunity to compete in the digital space?
Yeah, good point there as well. And then last question, if someone out there had a question, wanted to maybe partner with you, what's the best way, both Corey and Sandra, for people to be in touch with you? Again, if they had a question about maybe something we covered, or they had, you know, maybe from a business perspective, wanted to partner on anything.
Oh, everyone can reach us at info@risingwinescollective.com, and we'll get the email directly to us.
Okay, great.
And you're welcome to find us on Rising Wines Collective is our handle for all our social media. And feel free to look us up on LinkedIn.
Great. Well, again, you've been listening to Sipping Success. I'm your host, Casey Hawkinson. We have been talking to the co-founders of Rising Wines Collective, Corey Amundson, Sandra Everingham. It's been a pleasure having you on. And again, for all of you out there, listening, if you have interest, check out risingwinescollective.com, a great way for you to experience Oregon, Washington, and California region wines. Thanks again for joining us. It's been a wonderful episode. And until next time, thank you all.
Yes. Thank you, Casey.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap on another insightful episode of Sipping Success, brought to you by Mushroom Media. We hope our discussions have left you thirsting for more knowledge in the world of beverages and alcohol. Stay connected with us on social media for updates. And remember, the journey to success is best enjoyed one sip at a time. Keep exploring trends, connecting with leaders, and scaling your brand. Until our glasses meet again, cheers to your continued success. And may your cups always runneth over with inspiration. We'll catch you in the next episode.